From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to the home edition of The Treatment. Yet another episode. I'm Elvis Mitchell, talking to my guest from her home somewhere out there in the world. She was last here for the series Shots Fired, but of course you know her from 20 years ago. She made her feature film debut with the film Love and Basketball. This new piece of hers, which debuts on Netflix this week, The Old Guard, the adaptation of the Greg Rucka, forgive me, graphic novel, actually feels like in a lot of ways like a companion piece to that. And I'll ask her about them. My guest, of course, is Gina Prince-Bythewood. Gina, so good to have you back.
Great to be back.
I do think, though, interesting because one of the things I think kind of connects these two things in a way is that they're both about women owning their physicality in a way that's not sexualized at all, but about relationship with the women and professionalism. And I'm sure that's something you brought to it because that's not something specifically that's in the comic.
Yeah, 100%. I love the fact that Monica is in some ways tied to these characters, Andy and Niall in The Old Guard, and that, you know, so much of Monica was, and honestly, because she was so much of me, this fight to be able to be myself, to not be thought of as different or that there was something wrong with me because I love sports, because I love the physicality, because I love to be ambitious and aggressive and go after things I wanted. That's all Monica. And now, you know, 20 years later, we have Andy and Niall, these two women who are warriors innately, but it's celebrated in this respect. So I almost see this as this growth, both, you know, in terms of characters, but also in terms of what the world is accepting at this point.
We're talking about The Old Guard, of course, which has a premiere this week on Netflix. And Gina, I guess when I read the comic and heard that you were doing it, I thought in a lot of ways there's material in this that relates to what you do thematically. And we can talk about so much between, you know, Beyond the Lights or Secret Life of Bees, this sort of way that women have to get past the way society looks at them to see each other. And I wonder if that's one of the things that you saw in The Old Guard that you thought you could make work for you.
Foremost, I love that there were two women at the center of this action drama that absolutely grabbed me. In addition to the fact that one was a young Black female hero, which is rare in this arena as well. And I love the fact that they were warriors and fighters, and it just was. There was not any speech about a traumatic experience that happened to them that forced them to find their strength and therefore become who they were. They are innately warriors. And I love that because that's the kind of woman that I like to think of myself as and the kind of women I grew up around in being an athlete, this normalization of, you know, of strength and athleticism. And, you know, that was so important for me to put up on screen because the more that we can do that, the more we can normalize it, not only for women, to tap into this belief that courage has no gender and badass has no gender. You know, we all have it in us. It's just about giving ourselves permission to tap into it in a way that, you know, the world doesn't always encourage us to do.
And you're talking about Andy and Niall, the characters played by Charlize Theron and Kiki Layne. But it's interesting, too. I mean, I even think about there's an opening speech that Andy gives that's taken basically right out of the comic, if my memory serves me right, that could be something that you wrote just about the exhaustion of carrying all these burdens of being a woman. Of course, she's an immortal, so that's another level of exhaustion. But just almost a spiritual kind of tired that so many of your characters have to deal with and the things you've written.
Yeah, I had loved that speech because it is a woman who has been fighting on the side of right, you know, as long as, I mean, we can't even fathom. It's been 6,000 years and trying to help the world who doesn't always want to be helped. And she is exhausted. She is not receiving anything back reciprocally and wants it to end. And that search for purpose or, you know, that loss of purpose was something that I just connected with kind of gutturally. And despite the fact that she isn't immortal, it feels like such a human thing. and something that not just I, but I thought that many people in the audience could connect to. And it's that exhaustion. I feel like I've certainly been in a sustained fight for the last 20 years in this industry, fighting the good fight. And I'm tired, but you know, you still gotta get up and you still gotta fight, because you know, if we're not fighting, you know, who is?
I mean, I guess I thought it was so interesting too, because again, like I'm saying, there's so many things in this material, kind of at the heart of it, that could almost have been written by you, and you must have been a little bit shocked in reading it, weren't you?
You know, foremost, Greg Rucka, who wrote the graphic novel, he adapted his own work, and that's very rare. It really did, as I read it, it felt so much like me and everything that I wanted to do when I had the opportunity to move into this big sandbox and do a big film like this. Like, it had all the elements that I would have created for myself. I think that's why I connected with it so much. And then in working with Greg, you know, on the script and continuing to develop it, you know, certainly one of my big things was to, you know, really expand the role of Niall, make sure that she had a full arc and story, make sure she was, you know, more integral in the plot and the climax. And in addition to that, it was adding this element, which I got from this incredible book I read called On Killing.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, for soldiers. And it talks about how the act of taking a life is as damaging to the psyche as one's fear of losing their life on the battlefield. And I thought that made so much sense for Andy, who is compelled to kill because for her, taking one life to save many, but that has to take a toll. In addition to Niall, who, you know, in service as a soldier, has her first kill. And I wanted this film, given that it is a violent film, and I'm unapologetic about that, I never wanted it to feel like a celebration of violence. And I wanted to be truthful to the violence, which meant I felt being truthful to the impact that this violence has on these characters, and kind of bring that we don't often see in films like this, you know, because it is violence and they have to kill. And I just found that fascinating to really deal with that with these characters, and especially these two female characters.
It's a treatment. I'm talking to our old friend Gina Prince-Bythewood, whose new work for Netflix is The Old Guard. And as we're talking about this, I'm remembering some of the conversation we had some stuff about just thinking about shots fired and how that was kind of about the same thing, the trauma of dealing with this, the kind of the ongoing trauma of being in a world of violence. And unlike the comic, you know, and there's a moment of horror in the comic where Niall, well, I don't want to give too much away, but when she has her encounter. And also, it's treated in the film as if it's this moment of sort of death and rebirth, but dealing with the consequences of her own death and taking a life. And she even mentions some of the elements you're talking about from On Killing, which I think is really powerful stuff. I mean, taking a life doesn't make you heroic in this context.
Yeah, when I had read that book as preparation for me shooting this, and I did not know what it was about. It just felt like I wanted to learn more about soldiers. And I was pretty blown away by that conceit, because I think we are certainly raised on action films and even films about war where, you know, soldiers are heroic and they, you know, they take a life and then they just move on, or they make a, you know, a humorous quip, you know, after taking a life. And I had never thought about the impact of truly what that must be to take a life, because again, we're so pushed to believe that it is something cool and heroic and sometimes fun. And so it had a big impact on me and the way I wanted to approach this and approach the violence within the film.
I gotta say, it even made me kind of laugh, because as I was watching, I was thinking about the very beginning of Love and Basketball, when Monica has to prove herself and it gets kind of violent. And there's an opening action sequence. I mean, it's weird that your world turned out to be this circular over the course of 20 years, but I just laughed because I saw so many parallels in this. And it also, what you had to do in your very first film was to stage all that basketball stuff with the same kind of precision that you would do with an action sequence, but also let us know where we are at all times, which is all really hard stuff to do in your first movie, let alone on the scale that you do it in The Old Guard.
Yeah, shooting the action was, you know, obviously a big step up for me. I touched on it in the Marvel pilot I did Marvel's Cloak and Dagger. But this was, you know, a whole nother level. And it's funny because in reading the graphic novel, which became my Bible throughout the whole process, you know, I'm reading it as an audience and seeing these panels and seeing the kill floor and thinking, oh, that, you know, wow, that looks really cool. Then I get the job and suddenly it turns into, oh my God, how am I going to shoot this? And so I decided to approach each action scene. One, I wanted them to all have a different feel to it, but let me start with what is the story of the scene? Because for me, the best action absolutely has a story, a beginning, middle, and end. It's character driven. It's emotional, so that nothing ever feels like just random people shooting or random people punching each other. I mean, that can get monotonous. So, but if there's a story to it, if there's character to it, it means something. So I really approached it that way first. And, you know, like the kill floor, you know, how do I believably show four characters with archaic weapons defeating 16 mercenaries with modern weaponry? What is the conceit that we can believe it? Because for me, I wanted this film, despite its fantastical conceit, to feel completely grounded and real. And so I just thought about what would be that extra edge that they would have, and realized, and honestly, again, research is everything in that book on killing, I realized the old guard, you know, for thousands of years had to kill up close, hand-to-hand combat, kill with the sword, kill with the saber, kill with an axe. That's up close and personal. Whereas modern mercenaries and soldiers, you're raised on the gun, which is learning to shoot targets. It's very impersonal. You're from a distance. And I felt that little hesitation, that someone that did not have that ability to kill up close, that's the advantage that the old guard had. And so incorporating that into the scene, I felt really helped sell the believability of that moment.
Well, also too, I mean, she, in the film, The Old Guard, Andy has the battle axe that's basically like a battle standard from the comic, which is a really instantly iconic piece of weaponry, isn't it?
I mean, it's in my office now. I love it. and my boys can't keep their hands off of it. But how could you? I mean, I wanted, again, having said that the graphic novel was my Bible, there's a reason why I'm here, because Greg created these characters in this story. And of course, then I need to take it and have my own vision to it. But there's also a whole audience out there that has fallen in love with this property. And so I wanted to stay true to a lot of it. And foremost, I wanted the weapons to match exactly as a graphic novel. And, you know, you do want, it's a different thing. I made a specific point, we would never fetishize the guns. It was just something I just never wanted an audience to feel. And because the characters don't, but in terms of their specific archaic weaponry, that is something that they've developed for themselves. And, you know, I felt like I could, you know, do that a little bit more with that kind of weaponry.
With so much to talk about here, my guest is Jeannie Prince-Bythe, with her newest film as director for Netflix as an adaptation of the Image comic, forgive me, graphic novel, it's 21st century, The Old Guard. It's The Treatment. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Welcome back. It's The Treatment, debating the fine points of comics versus graphic novels, with my guest, Jeannie Prince-Bythe, whose newest film is an adaptation of the graphic novel, The Old Guard. She knows about The Good Fight because in her first film, somebody played for the Clippers. So if anybody knows about The Good Fight, it's Jeannie Prince-Bythe. But I do want to take you back to Love and Basketball, just because, again, I was thinking back to that first scene And the idea of using action to establish character is a really risky thing to do, because especially in you doing it before you really get to know anybody. And I wondered, again, it was just crazy to me to see so many parallels, but you often will use an early sequence to show somebody's mastery of their craft, be it in Secret Life of Bees or Beyond the Light. You really want to show us early on that your lead character knows who she is and what she's doing and is realized through the practice of that. And I wondered if that's something that you also found that attracted you to the old guard, because again, it kind of falls in line with what I think is one of your strengths.
Yeah, absolutely. The first action sequence, which comes pretty early in the film, is a showcase of the old guard, but ultimately it's a showcase for Andy. You know, I allow each character within the kill floor to have their moment, but then it focuses on Andy and she goes to town. And we realize as an audience how lethal she is, how brutally efficient she is. And also, my hope is that, again, they're killing, but there's no glee in it. And it sets a tone. It sets up for an audience who she is, what she's about, what she's capable of. And I found the same thing in our introduction to Nile, where for me, it was really two introductions. It was her first introduction as a Marine in this village. And the way I wanted to reveal her, I wanted to see her goodness first, knowing where her character was going to have to go in terms of accepting the fact that this is who you are and you are going to have to learn to kill, but it is for a greater good. So revealing her with the little kids and the gum and, you know, a softness. But her second reveal is in the airplane fight between her and Andy, where she is, you know, angry and scared and trying to break free and is starting with, you know, this fighting style that she's learned as a Marine, and her frustration keeps building because she can't even touch Andy. Andy is that good, and kind of drops that pretense and just goes back to the streets and starts throwing bows and finally connects. But you see in that scene that Nile keeps coming. She keeps getting knocked down, but she keeps getting back up. And that says so much about who she is as a character early on.
Yeah, I want to continue with that too, because that's something that you do early on in your movies. It happens early in Shots Fired too. But that idea of just showing somebody, showing a woman with control, with command.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really interesting thing. And it's something that I wonder at what point it was a conscious choice for you, or is it a conscious choice? So just talk about that a little bit, because you want to create a kind of thing that I think makes us understand that these women dominate the center of their own lives.
You know, it's fascinating because I have, until you said this, I haven't really consciously thought about it. But, you know, for me as a writer, I mean, every character, you give every character an entrance. And, you know, I want to establish off the bat that these, you know, the strength of these characters. And, you know, it's interesting. A lot of times women are introduced, it might be, you know, a camera going up their body, you know, or a camera from their back, and then they turn. Like, it's selling the sexuality of a character first, especially of a female character, where for me, you know, I want to sell the strength first, because those are the type of characters, the type of women that I want to put up on screen.
I just think it's a really exciting thing to see, and just to have it happen so often. I just think it's for me, it's kind of a go-to thing. And I just think it's fascinating too, because we're really talking about this way of, in a pretty nuanced fashion, of telling us who the center of these projects are going to be.
Yeah. I mean, I love setting the tone and for an audience to understand, oh, okay, it's this type of story. It's this type of character. You know, subverting expectations, certainly, not only of what kind of movie you think you're sitting down to see, but our expectations of what is femininity, who gets to be the ideal woman, just reframing that discussion, that narrative, and showing an audience something different that for me is the truth. And I want to make it more of a truth for everybody.
I guess, too, I think in this, the relationship often, I'm not exactly sure how to put this, but there's sometimes a kind of uneasy relationship between parent and child, or mentor and protege in your movies. And this definitely fits into that too, doesn't it?
Early on, I felt I wanted to, you know, really push this, you know, I'll call it a trope, but in this respect, I just thought it was fun to see Niall and Andy as this really unique veteran-rookie relationship, given that the veteran is 6,000 years old and the rookie is, you know, this baby immortal. But that dynamic, I thought, could work really well with these two characters.
We should give the audience a little taste of what we're talking about here. This is an action-adventure about a band of immortals who are passing into kind of another part of their lives. And a big part of their operation is being able to operate in secrecy, which is something that is diminishing in the 21st century. And it's also, interestingly, I think, in metaphorical terms, at least in what we're seeing here, they're also forced to recognize some things about themselves as they, in fact, are being recognized in the greater world, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. The fact that they've been around for so long, it was something I really had to think a lot about, because in this day and age, there are cameras everywhere. And really thinking about, at what point did these characters understand we can't pose for pictures anymore, which is really kind of explored in the end title sequence where you get to see them throughout history. But, you know, at one point did they realize, wow, this image means that we are locked into this forever. So it was fun, but also difficult to navigate. And at some point it was really, let's pull the cameras out of here, because, you know, we want to always make it clear that they are always trying to hide from, you know, eyes and what the world has become, which is, you know, all knowing, all seeing, all watching.
I guess I find it interesting, too, that you, in casting terms, there's so many people of color in this. I mean, because, and also we should recognize, too, the fact that you're a rarity. You're an anomaly. You're an African-American woman directing an action-adventure adaptation of a graphic novel. That doesn't happen a whole lot.
Yeah, still having firsts in 2020. It should not be this rare. There is a narrative, absolutely, in Hollywood, one that women don't want to make these films, and two, that, you know, Black directors, Black female directors only want to do one thing. And again, there's so many talented chicks out there that, you know, we want to do, you know, all genres. But in doing this, absolutely, you see the importance of having a Black woman in the chair, given that when I came aboard and reading the script and noticing, hey, Niall does not have as full a story as these other characters. Would somebody else have recognized that? I don't think so, because you see time and time again, Black characters in this genre being the sidekick or the comedic relief or completely disappearing for, you know, a chunk of a movie. And you always wonder why. And, you know, it's because there are not people in positions of power, whether it be the director's chair or, say, head of a studio, that can recognize that in a guttural way and understand how important it is to dive in and make sure that our Black characters have a full story and are not invisible.
But it's not just Niall's casting. You have a couple of African actors in this film, you know, Chiwetel and Marwan, but actors who make it, who are actors of color, but also make it feel international in a way that I think is really interesting. And again, works, I think, in kind of a subtextual way.
Yeah, one of the things I loved about this was absolutely, it felt organically diverse in that it's definitely a global story. And you have this band of warriors from different backgrounds and cultures and sexual orientations and genders that have come together to save the world. And for me, in knowing that I was going to cast it to reflect these different cultures, allow everyone to stay true to their culture, but not only the old guard, but others in the cast, I want to look up at the film and see the world that I see. And we don't always get that opportunity to see it. And again, I feel like, you know, someone said the other day, the Black female gaze, which I thought, well, I never thought about it that way before. But it is true. The things that I pay attention to or that I want or desire to see on screen is different because, you know, I'm living within this world, not at the top, but, you know, looking out at it, and others who are in this position of directing and in charge of casting, they're peppering the film with people that they see every day. And oftentimes their world is much more insular than mine. So I love that we have Chiwetel, who is just a king, and Marwan, and even in the smaller parts, you know, when her two Marine counterparts, you know, just women of color. And I just, that was absolutely intentional.
But I guess I thought too, because again, just to sort of finish this on me being obsessed with your career, but just that kind of loneliness that comes out of being still in 2020, mm-hmm. a woman who has reached this certain point and looking for somebody else to connect with. And this is one of the times, I guess, it happened. But so often you, in these movies that you've done, they've been about women trying to find someone like them because of that loneliness, again, going back to the beginning of the movie almost, that comes from being a woman who is accomplished and expert at something and finding other women who can do what they do.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, certainly in my 20-year career, I've been the only one in the room way too often, even up to this point. And it is exhausting and disheartening. And you are, you know, I'm fortunate to, you know, be married to Reggie Rock, who has gone through the same thing that I have in the number of rooms and spaces where you're the only one and fighting constantly for good, correct, authentic portrayals of us. And it shouldn't be this way. For me, certainly, the fact that I have gotten into this door, there's no celebration to be the only one in the room. It's, you know, it's more of, okay, now I have the opportunity to elevate others and pull them through after me. That's absolutely just a responsibility I feel I have, and I don't want to be the only one.
I guess that's fascinating too, because you said something earlier before we go, I want to have you talk about a little bit, this narrative that women don't want to do action films, women directors.
Oh, that's Hollywood, absolutely. The narrative, one, that women don't like to watch action, which was absolutely blown out the water with Wonder Woman and what Patty Jenkins accomplished. She absolutely opened the door. She cracked it open. It was still open a crack, but she cracked it open for a number of us this year. But in addition, that women don't want to do these films. They think Hollywood, for the most part, think we want to stay in our quiet boxes and do love stories and small stories and period pieces. And that's all well and good. I love a great love story and I look forward to doing another one, but I want to do every genre except for horror and except for a Western. Those are the two I don't want to do, but I love action. And the thought that I could be in the space and put my aesthetic on the genre and try and disrupt it a little bit, like, I've been wanting that, and I know there's a number of other women who want the same thing. Just Hollywood hasn't caught up to our desire yet.
We're out of time. It's always so good for you to talk to you, Gina. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you, Elvis.
My pleasure. My guest is Gina Prince-Bythewood. Her newest film as director is The Old Guard for Netflix. Our recording engineer at KCRW also mixes and edits the show. So women can do everything, clearly. It's Kat Yor. I'm Elvis Mitchell. To better days, everybody. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or if you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.